This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Broad.
On Joy 94.9.
This podcast is presented to you by Broad on Joy 94.9 at the Melbourne Feminist Writers Festival. Broad presents What is Feminist Writing and Finding Your Feminist Voice at the Melbourne Feminist Writers Festival.
Welcome to What is Feminist Writing and Finding Your Feminist Voice. Before we begin, I wish to acknowledge that we're gathered today on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nations, and I would like to pay my respects to their elders, past and present, and to elders from other communities who may be here today. I'm Monica Ducks. I programmed this session, but I'm not going to actually have anything to do with it, really, other than introducing the panellists, and we're going to have 10 minutes of questions at the end. We don't have heaps of time, as I'm sure you're all aware. It's only a 50-minute session, so if we could keep our questions succinct and no long explanations about too much, which is, you know, I don't want to keep that for later. The Twitter hashtag is FWF16, my hashtag. So tweet, go crazy. We want to go global. So we've got 10 minutes to the end. There's not going to be a lot of questions time, but that's okay. We have an absolute zero tolerance policy for hate speech or aggression, and we ask for respectful engagement with everyone in attendance, which I'm sure you all will be, but you never will, do you? If you need any assistance, I think so, is that right, Christy?
I'm sorry, you don't.
I don't?
No, that's me.
You've heard all this, haven't you? If you need any assistance. Okay, and that's really... Oh, and we'd like to thank Womankind for sponsoring us, so let's give them a round of applause. And her latest novel is An Isolated Incident. In the middle, kind of on the left, is Leanne Lowe. She's a writer and a spoken word artist. From 2010 to 2014, Leanne edited Peril, Australia's leading online platform for Asian Australian writing, arts and culture. From 2013 to 2015, she travelled to Singapore and Malaysia for research and created site-specific spoken word performances, Malacca Art and Performance Festival. She's currently working on a travel memoir about this journey, which I reckon will be amazing. And at the end is Jean Taylor. Now, Jean is a radical lesbian feminist writer and activist who has been writing and publishing in Melbourne for more than 40 years. Her most recent book, Lesbians Ignite in Victoria in the 1990s, is the third in her archives trilogy, which also includes, I love this title, Brazen Hussies, and her story of radical activism in the Women's Liberation Movement in Victoria, 1970 to 1979, and Stroppy Dykes, radical lesbian feminist activism in Victoria during the 1980s. Will you please welcome her? I'm going to make a funny sound or something to signal, so just...
Thanks, Monica. Hi, everyone. It's really great to be here at this festival today. I'm just going to sort of jump right in. We're all going to have, I think, a fairly free-ranging conversation, and as Monica said, we'll have some questions at the end. So I reckon we should start by kind of tackling the question head-on. I mean, the name of this session is What is Feminist Writing? This is the Feminist Writers Festival. When I started thinking about this question, to me, I thought, well, there's certain writing that is obviously feminist writing. It's activist writing. It has clear feminist aims. It's written for a really specific purpose. I think we all know what that is when we see it. But I also think everyone here understands that feminist writing is obviously much, much broader than that, and that's the kind of things I want to talk about today. Because I realised for myself I don't have an easy definition, I don't have an easy answer to this question. Thinking as a reader first before a writer, because I was a reader for a long time before I was a writer, and I still read a lot more than I write. Some of the moments that have most opened up my feminist consciousness or really changed the way I think about gender and sex and myself and my place in the world have been reading things that are not self-consciously feminist and are not particularly have that activist aim. I mean, one thing that's always struck with me was reading the novel The Long Prospect by Elizabeth Harrower. And just having, which is a novel set sort of around the Newcastle suburbs in the 1950s, and the main character is this working class adolescent girl. And it just took her so seriously as an intellect, as someone with an inner life. And that is like a hugely profound kind of breakthrough moment for me when I was still quite young, of realising that the lives of a young girl, a young working class girl, might be worth taking seriously and might be worth talking about. So, you know, I can come up with loads of examples like that in literature, and I have no idea if Elizabeth Harrow identifies as feminist. I'm pretty sure she didn't write that as a specifically feminist novel. But there's so much writing that can have that kind of perhaps unintended effect on us. So, I don't know, you guys, if you have a sense of what is meant by feminist writing. We'll go to you first.
As we've been doing all this afternoon, I too would like to acknowledge the Indigenous owners of this area, the Wurundjeri people of the Woiwurrung language group, and also the Boonwurrung people as well, pay my respects to their elders past and present, and pay my respects also to the Indigenous women in the audience today. So, what is feminist writing? I come from the 1970s feminism, have been around for a long time. I'm now 72. I still consider myself, as I was introduced, as a radical lesbian feminist. And as somebody who's been writing for a long, long time, I consider my writing is a reflection of my feminist values, the framework by which I try and live my life as a feminist and as a lesbian. Both of these have had to be learned, because when I was growing up in the 60s, 50s and 60s, that was not the case. And so one of the biggest moments of my life was when I went to my first consciousness raising group in 1972, and I sat in a circle, as we did in those days, and none of us really knew what we were doing there or how we were going to do it. We were just making it up as we went along. And this was in Brunswick, where I still live in Brunswick. And instead of people saying to me, "Your ideas are mad, Jean, you know, you've got to stop," I was at that stage, I just went back to study. I left school at 16, so I went back to study. When my children went to school, I went back to school. And a lot of my the people I knew thought this was rather crazy. What was I doing studying? And so here I was in this group, and people were saying, "Yeah, that's fine. You ride a motorbike, that's fine. You're studying at La Trobe Uni. Isn't that a good thing?" And so from there, we started to develop, and this is where a lot of the feminist theory came from the consciousness-raising groups of the 70s, where we talked about our lives and our first periods, what was happening when we got our first period, how were we brought up differently to our brothers, what were our mothers' lives like, did we want to live the kind of life that our mothers had been living, all of those kinds of things that had never been questioned before. We were taught to act in a certain way as women, which is very stereotypically not the sort of life that you'd want to live out the rest of your life. And so, and it was a very repressive era that in the 60s, for example, if you were a teacher and you got married, a female teacher got married, you were immediately sacked. So you were no longer a permanent teacher. You could be rehired as a teacher who was just a casual teacher. I mean, that's only a little while back. And so with the Women's Liberation Movement, it was a really big lifesaver for women like myself, that we were suddenly questioning every aspect of our lives. Anything that we'd been doing up to that time, we were questioning it. But we weren't doing it in isolation. I think that was one of the most exciting aspects of feminism, that we were doing it in groups, that we were doing it with other like-minded feminists, so that whatever part of our lives, from what kind of rubbish bin line is used to how you related with your mother, whether you wanted to be what sort of career you wanted or not. I was one of those who chose to live outside of the patriarchal structures, and while that had its disadvantages, it had huge advantages for myself as a feminist. And then, of course, I was able to come out in the late 70s and embraced being a lesbian feminist, and I think that has informed my life as well as my writing a great deal. And from I can't imagine writing without being a lesbian feminist, and I was writing the kind of books that I wanted to read. There weren't many books around at that stage, and there's heaps now. But in the 70s, believe it or not, you could read all the books as they came out, you know. Oh, another book's come out. Oh, let's read it, you know. And there were bookshops, you know, full of, you know, women's bookshops. When I first heard that there were bookshops full of women's books, I, of course, like a lot of people, didn't think, have we written enough books to fill a bookshop? Of course we had. It was incredible. So by the 80s, there were more and more books, and 90s, of course, and nowadays I'm lucky to read, a mere smidgen of the books that come out, which is exciting in itself. Yeah, feminist writing for me is my life, my how I am, how I breathe, how I write, everything. It's just, I can't imagine not being a feminist and not being a feminist writer, etc.
Thank you. Thank you, Jean. Before I begin, I also want to acknowledge elders past and present of the Kulin Nations, and to also acknowledge First Nations people here today as well. I guess for me, when an articulation of a feminist politic is also about a solidarity with and an understanding of and advancements of justice that's led by First Nations sovereignty. Sorry, I'm actually feeling a bit nervous and I'm a bit quite tired, so I'm just kind of, I feel like I'm swallowing my words also, so I'm really sorry about that. But I just thinking about with that question about what is feminist writing, how do I define feminist writing? I mean, hearing about what Jean was talking about, and also about how she started writing in her life, and also how you began the session also having read a story for the first time about a working class character, a young woman and her inner life. And I think, that's for me as being someone, as a woman of colour, as an Asian Australian woman, that I arrived in Australia in the 1990s, 1991, and I was 14 years old, and as a newly arrived migrant, I struggled to find my identity, so my place in this country, how I situated myself. And so I began writing I just began writing my journals for over 4 years, or just writing in my journals basically, and then And it was a way of understanding myself, my body, my sense of who I was in the world, my sexuality. You know, this journal's kind of writing became a monologue. And I was able to kind of present it in a public forum because it won a short play competition. And I had a play reading at the Victorian Arts Centre. And so that was a really big, I guess for me that was a big deal because it was about coming out. It was being, you know, being a woman of colour, talking about racism, but also talking in a way that, and at the time also they weren't able to find a character who could play a Chinese-Malaysian character on stage. And they had to fly someone from, Fiona Choi, who plays Benjamin Law's mother, flew her when she was a student at the Western Australian Performing Arts Academy to Melbourne to play the character. And so this was in 1996. I think my family also accepted my sexuality from there because they saw that it was... in a public forum, it was kind of accepted, and that was a way of writing myself into being, and for me, that was a kind of a feminist thing to do. that's a roundabout way.
No, that's great. Actually, I noted down a quote from your essay in Growing Up Asian in Australia, which is a fantastic book, and Leanne's essay is excellent too. But the quote is, "Creativity and my personal growth have gone hand in hand. Thanks to my writing and performing, the big private turning points in my life have become very memorable public events." And I think that speaks to actually a lot of... feminist writers or writers in any of these kind of contested spaces would really identify with that. I mean, I know for me, from the background I came from, I still quite regularly am in environments where feminism is perhaps not a dirty word, but completely misunderstood, is not what it is in this space as a kind of just acceptable decency baseline. It's something that actually has to be defined and redefined and argued over, and that goes for so many aspects of my life. And in writing, all of those things come out. And you know, we all know about the personal being political, but for me, so much the political is personal in that way too. And when I write something that is more activist, or the things that I write that are more specifically feminist, and I do want to talk more about what the difference might be, but I find that that is in a sense bringing those conversations into my private life rather than the other way around, as people might expect, as taking who you are in private and writing about that for a public space. Is that your experience? Obviously it is with that particular play that you were writing about there, but more generally too.
Thank you. Because I think for me it's... the part of the work that I do also is about spoken word. And so and my first spoken word gig, shared the stage with Lisa Belair, and there was this event at Midsummer with organized by a friend who's also amazing activist, disability activist. She's a Jewish part of founder of the Jewish lesbian group Hinder Inner Burstyn. And she organized this event, and she had two extraordinary Indigenous Australian women, Ray Bennett and Lisa Belair, poets on stage. And there was Tom Cho, who was Natasha Cho at the time. And then for me, such a profound experience because I was very young and I was also learning about my experience of articulating what my politics was. Being someone who's a migrant, coming in as a migrant, someone who benefits from living on Aboriginal country as well. So, and then articulating what that actually means. And also then bringing it into a feminist politic. And I think... And so spoken word was a way for me to just grab those ideas and thoughts and then try and articulate them. And then since then writing kind of longer form essays or, you know, pieces and so forth. But I guess that kind of public performance of is a way to articulate something that's kind of private and personal. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Jean, you've written across a huge range of forms, and I'm wondering how your feminist intent or the aims works differently in those different forms when you're working in fiction, when you're working in non-fiction, when you're working in, you know, really quite in-depth history, as you have done in that trio of books. How is your thinking different in terms of bringing feminism into those works?
Well, my first works were in fiction. I almost exclusively wrote in short stories, and in novels. And most of my writing in those early days in the 70s and 80s was about writing about lesbian feminist lives. There weren't many books, especially Australian books, about lesbians, lesbian feminism. And so I was wanting to not only describe or write about the kinds of lives we're living that weren't being written about anywhere else, but also as we often do, make sense of our own lives. You know, I was writing about what I was doing, how I was doing it, and why. I worked in women's refuges in the 90s, so I wrote a book about it. I went to Lesbos for about 3 months and lived on the beaches there, so I wrote about that. That's called Sappho's Wild Lesbians. The other one's called Loose Women. So most of my writing came out of the kinds of work I was doing. I worked on the trams. I was a driver on the W-class trams for a while. So I wrote a book called Always Start Your Car With Two Bells. So almost exclusively I did that through the 70s and 80s. And, of course, another aspect of that, of my activist work at the time, I was very busy as a radical lesbian feminist activist, but also nobody wanted to publish my work, not too surprisingly. And so I decided that I would publish my own work. So I started publishing, learning how to publish. I was on, well, because when I worked at, when I was a student at La Trobe, I was on the Rabelais student newspaper, as some of us in the feminist group at La Trobe were, and I learned how to do layout and that kind of thing, so I figured it wasn't too difficult and perhaps I could just put out my own books, which I did, and put out quite a number of my books. And fortunately in Melbourne at that time, we had a feminist printing press called Sibylla Press, and that was very, very liberating for somebody like myself who was writing and publishing, paying for it myself, of course, and also having a feminist printing press here in Melbourne that I could just, you know, have all my books published without too much trouble. But then when I started much more doing non-fiction, and my books over the last several years have been non-fiction, as was described before, three books in a trilogy. And that came about because, so I'd been an activist for a long time by that stage, a lesbian feminist activist. I was also interested in the archives. I joined the Victorian Women's Liberation and Lesbian Feminist Archives group in 1984, and I'm still on that collective. It's my longest relationship. I haven't been involved with anybody for that long. And I'd been a radical lesbian feminist activist, I was an archivist, and I'd been a writer for a long time. And I decided that I wanted to write about all of the things we'd been doing for 30 years, from the 70s, the 80s and the 90s. I actually started off by just doing about the 70s first. I thought that'll be fine, and then I realised that we did even more stuff in the 80s and then even more stuff in the 90s. So I've written those those three books. Now, I started that when I was 60 because I realised if I didn't do it now, having talked about it and thought about it for a long time, if I didn't do it now, they wouldn't get written. Because I was sort of seeing the end of my life quite clearly by that stage. It wasn't just an academic, I was an academic question. There's no doubt that I was going to be dying at some point in the immediate future, just over there. Whereas when I was 20, of course, you have unlimited time, even 50, you have unlimited time. But hitting 60, I realised I didn't have unlimited time. And so, yes, and that's been a lot of hard work, actually, trying to get all the nitty-gritty details down. And I'm very glad that they're done now, that I feel that I've completed sort of a bit of a major work in terms of describing the kind of activism that we did. And I'm constantly amazed in talking to younger lesbian feminists or younger feminists that they have no idea, really, even just a little while back, about what we did. For example, if I say, in 1990, I was on the collective to do a lesbian conference at Melbourne Uni. We booked a lot of rooms at Melbourne Uni at great cost, and there were 1,000 lesbians who registered for that conference. It was a very exciting conference, and it was part of a 10-day lesbian feminist festival. We booked out Dallas Brooks Hall. We had plays, we had a whole range of entertainment, Footscray Community Arts Centre, we booked out completely. So, and nothing like that's happening now. And the next year when the Sydney mob did it, the Sydney lesbians, they booked out the Opera House. Now, to walk into the Opera House, where there's 2,000 lesbians, absolutely thrilled to bits to be there for a concert, and the noise level just rose and rose and rose. And so that's the sort of stuff that we've been doing for the last, 40 years. Very exciting stuff. And I think it amazes me that younger feminists have no idea about the activism. We're talking about how to get, to get this conference, this festival up. There's a lot of hard work. Well, you can imagine the hard work to get a festival up where there's going to be 2,000
participants. I think any participants over organisationally 10 days. Minded people here should take that as a challenge. Yeah. to get this happening, yeah. Opera House, yes, 2017.
That's right, and a 10-day festival, not just a one. So I've just put in a plug for all of the activist work that has gone before feminist.
It's really interesting, and I think it brings me to this sort of wider point of who we're writing for as feminists, and the different kinds of writing that we might be doing for different audiences. Because very clearly that history you are writing, partly because these stories are important. The past of the movement is important, and the work that's been done, and it's important to. To put those stories down so that new generations can know what has happened, both, just in the sense of understanding the past so we can understand the present, but also quite often as a guide when we need to get into action again of, not reinventing the wheel, of seeing what actually has been done in the past and learning from that. I think a lot about audience in terms of feminist writing because... so much of the feminist writing that I love and means a lot to me is because of this sense of solidarity or this sense of recognition or this sense of comfort and of feeling seen and feeling understood or having someone articulate something that I've felt but I haven't had the words for. And that's incredibly powerful and incredibly important. But it's also not the things that's actually bringing new people to the cause or new people into the fight. And so some of, to me now, the most directly radical feeling activist writing I do is actually in a teen girls magazine, because I'm writing feminism for an audience that very often thinks that feminism is something historical or they have a really narrow view of it. And I'm writing about it in a way that will give them that history in small doses and hopefully activate them to actually go out and learn more and do things themselves. That's a very, very specific audience, and it's writing with a very, very specific aim. The frustration with that kind of feminist writing in the long term is that if you have to keep trying to involve people who are outside of the movement and don't understand it. If you have to keep explaining history, if you have to keep defining terms, we never really move further. We don't get a deeper discussion. I mean, it's the great thing about this particular festival is that we have this baseline understanding of what feminism is, whereas every writers' festival I've done in the last 10 years, I've almost always been on a panel called Feminism, and we spend the first 40 minutes. What is feminism? Are there still feminists? Do feminists exist now? And we don't get very far past that at all into digging into the real issues. So, you know, I guess what I grapple with is, with my writing, who am I writing for, apart from that really specific young teenage audience? Is it to further the discussion amongst people who are already down with the cause, or is it to bring in people, to call them in?
Yeah, when thinking about audience, I think for me, my work for the past since 2010 from 2010 to 2014, I edited a magazine, an online magazine called Peril, an Asian Australian Arts and Culture magazine. And for me, it's about this. You know, this magazine is about kind of building community. And we, all the editors are, you know, I would say, all strong feminists. But for us, we have, you know, like for us, race is very much, in the forefront of our agenda, because we are often racialized first before we're gendered. And I think, and sometimes I feel a frustration, though, about kind of being marginalized or not being part of a larger debate or a larger feminist debate in terms of, you know, kind of a bigger mainstream kind of audience from our perspectives. And I wonder about that, and I wonder about why or what the perception is about the work that we do, because the work that we do, you know, is most often anti-racist, is feminist, is queer, it has all these blends, but often we are only asked to talk about the Asian Australian kind of perspective. And in that sense, we don't really get that opportunity to be all our, you know, varied selves. In terms of my audience, for me also, the act of reading is quite political. So I, like earlier this morning in the spoken word, I listed a list of books that I read, I take comfort from, a list of Australian women literature. And for me, the list is, you know, it comprises Indigenous Australian women, women of colour, Asian Australian women, there was also Jewish women and Italian women, and also included Jean's workers. And then someone from the audience said to me, "I would love to know this list because I don't know this list of women that you read." And I think in some ways this kind of preaching to get converted is not really true, because we're still all learning from each other, and I bring from myself a set of politics or a set of reading, a set of histories, and that someone else, another woman, could be a completely different worldview. So I think there's always room to learn, and I think, I think the easy thing for me to say would be there's an Asian Australian audience that I write for, but I hope it's broader than that. But because I feel like we've been, you know, this magazine that I've been that I've done work for, which turns 10 this year, it feels like that's a kind of pigeonholing, but I have to remember to also not kind of fall into that trap of thinking that way also.
I think it's an inherent conflict in writing for any kind of publication that has a target audience, because that's your target audience then, you know, regardless of anything. So, but yeah, of course that's different than you as an individual writer and what you want to communicate and get across, and the larger audience that you hope is reached by that.
I don't really have a problem with preaching to the converted, you know, because there is a comfort in that, you know, that you are going to, you know, that your words are going to be accepted because they understand what you're saying and how you're saying it and why you're saying it a lot. And I think that it's like going to a demonstration. You know, the demonstration might have an effect, but I think one of the big things about a demonstration is that you're going to be seeing other people who have a like-minded worldview, and that you're all going to be, you know, this is what we want to have changed. And I think there's that's one of the big values about a demonstration, that you see hundreds of others like yourself with the same sort of worldview. And I think with my writing, that I know that I'm writing towards a lesbian feminist audience who is going to accept my work, you know, in a way that it's meant to be, you know, like you're doing with your online too. So, but by the same token, for years and years and years, we used to have a lesbian newsletter, then we had Lesbiana. So for about nearly 30 years, we had a lesbian newsletter here in Melbourne. And I wrote almost every month for at least 20 years. And that was a very empowering thing, because it meant that not only was I able to write what I wanted to write, but I knew that it would be accepted or inform the community a little bit, and there was a comfort in that. But now we don't. See, we don't have any lesbian-specific magazines anymore. We've still got the LGBTIQ monthly magazines. But a radical lesbian feminist does not have a voice in those magazines, which is very frustrating. So that we've gone from being one of the, you know, dominant voices, or, you know, along with everybody else, having a voice in our community, to not having a voice in our community. And so I still can get stuff published in a magazine in the States, Sinister Wisdom, a lesbian magazine in the States, another radical feminist magazine called Rain and Thunder in the States, but not here in Australia.
Do you know, Jean, if there's any online spaces where that's happening? Because so many, I mean, print magazines of all different kinds are now, those conversations and that kind of writing is mainly being published online now.
Yes, but I'm not aware. I like hard copy, I have to say.
Many of us.
And so given that there are a couple of outlets for that. But probably, I don't know. My impression is blogging and stuff like that, it's more personal, isn't it, that it's not in...
It can be. I'm by no means an expert in any way on this, because I don't write much myself online, but I think a lot of incredibly radical and important and pushing the conversation kind of writing is happening mostly online now because it can, because there aren't the gatekeepers, and people are self-publishing and writers who are saying something, you know, that is resonating with a feminist audience of whatever kind, that's being spread on its popularity, not because someone is boosting it and saying this is worth publishing, but because the words themselves are cutting through, which I find pretty exciting. Oh, we are already at question time, incredibly enough. So...
Jean, it's great that you've documented all of that activism, because if you hadn't, it would have been lost. And the other interesting thing, I think, is that the other thing about the marginalisation of different voices, in 1985 I organised a 9-day Women's Writers Festival called The Language of Difference, and the two key speakers were Audre Lorde and Kerry Hume. And in addition to that, there were whole days looking at Indigenous writing, Asian writing, writing about migration, about class and sexism and sexuality, all of these things we were talking about. We were covering these things. But they've not gone down through the histories. You know, it's like, it's as if these events never happened. And then we did the Australian Feminist Book Fortnight, which was a two-week national event that we, well, we said in our blurb, it went from Broome to Burnie. And the events in Broome and Burnie were fantastic because hardly ever were there literary events in country towns. So we had that for 2 years in 89 and 91. And then we had the International Feminist Book Fair in 94. So all of these things have gone on. And yet, you know, it's as if they haven't existed. And that's a shame that most people don't seem to know about it, not even feminists. Thanks.
We'll take that as a comment, and I've got another question over here.
Hi, I wrote it down, sorry, because I'm a terrible public speaker. As far as what is feminist writing, I suppose my question is for you, Emily. I guess what springs to mind immediately is sort of columns, social commentary, and we have no issue calling that feminist. You know, you sort of read daily life, etc. However, some of the most powerful writing that's informed my feminism has actually been fiction writing. I've recently read An Isolated Incident, which I loved. It's a brilliant feminist narrative. In its exploration, I thought of the love between sisters, of the politics of crime writing, of violence against women. I was just wondering, how much do you conceive of your work as having a place in the feminist canon, and how much were you thinking of it as crime fiction? And just sort of wanted you to speak on that.
Thank you very much. So it's interesting. I didn't think of it as crime fiction at all. That's the kind of label that was applied to it after it was published. I didn't mind that at all. I actually really love crime fiction. I was pretty flattered by it. But the feminist side of it, so I write nonfiction as well. I've written two nonfiction, really overtly feminist books. They're polemics, they're call to arms, they're right out there. Always in my fiction, I have not been, you know, explicitly feminist in the content or the subject matter, and yet again and again people would describe the books as feminist. And the more I thought about it, I thought, well, you know, to me the great strength of a writer and being a writer is that your job is to observe the world and to notice particularly things and to like curate from life, so different conversations and personalities and ideas, and then you bring them together and create this new thing. I, as Jean said earlier, I can't imagine not being a feminist, and therefore my worldview, the things I notice, the stories I want to tell are of course going to be through a feminist lens. With An Isolated Incident, I feel like while I was writing that, because it is against violence, about violence against women and about sisters and about women's stories and what women's lives are like in a particular context, while I was writing it, the thought did start creeping in, oh God, people are going to say this is political or this is feminist. And at some point I thought, I really don't give a shit. Like, this is what this story is, and this is about women's lives and the truth of those lies. If people define it as feminist, that's fantastic. I'm proud of that label. If they define it as something else, that's fine, because once it's published, it belongs to the reader. But I'm just not anymore, if I ever did, going to kind of shy away from, you know, embracing that. If I'm trying as a novelist to tell the truth about the human condition is also women's condition and how women live, and I can't hold back from that. I would be writing characters that feel less true to me.
So you've sort of a little bit answered my question there, but I'll pose it to the other two. I guess in your writing, do you ever feel like you need to pull yourself back a bit to make it more accessible for everyday readers and to try and reach a bigger audience, like going on talking about audiences you were before?
Could you clarify what you mean by accessible?
So I guess like the self is inherently like there in your writing and your experiences, but do you ever feel like you need to sort of step back a bit and not place your subjectivity in it so much that it's like, do you ever feel like your feminism in your writing is too, like, is overpowering? Do you ever feel like you need to pull that back to make it more friendly to audiences, I guess? Yeah, yeah.
No. I mean, I think part of kind of being, doing the online work, that you kind of go past gatekeepers. So you're able to, and we're able to work in a way where we plug on, we chug on, we we do a lot of work for free. And as you know, as this festival is done by volunteers, which is extraordinary because that's, you know, cannot be, that's, you know, so honorable. And I think we do that out of love, out of passion. And there's a cost to that with like writing with, it's very hard because it, whilst you're doing what you doing to develop, for me in terms of peril, like developing as a writer and writing on peril was a way to also grow grow myself as a writer. But then, when we taking on more of a conversation with other bigger or mainstream kind of, you know, organizations and festivals, there's always been a little bit of a conflict. And so for me the question then was like, do I care? Like, would I compromise what my politics are? And you know, it would always be no. It's, you know, I've done this, you know, well thus far. I've worked, you know, as hard as I can. I get whatever, you know, accolades I can get. But also honoring the writing in itself. Like, I think it's about your deepening your writing craft also, and being true to yourself. And I write primarily nonfiction. I have a failed fiction. Well, not failed. I don't know how to write good fiction. But I would love to learn. So maybe I should do a writing class with you one day. it's very much a... writing nonfiction is very much not a political identity, especially from for who I am in the world. It's an identity that I embrace, and I, you know, it's a struggle that I, and a fight that I, yeah, will continue to do if I have to.
I agree with Leanne that I don't think we can water down our feminism. Because unless we're true to ourselves, unless we're putting it out there, people aren't going to understand what it is that we're talking about. And also, this was brought home to me when I was in the 80s. I decided I'd start writing plays. I got together a lesbian feminist performing group. And we were writing lesbian feminist comedies. And I'd written three lesbian feminist comedies and we were going to perform them. And when the audience started coming in, when the audience of lesbians started laughing at the lines that I'd written after a lot of slogging around, you know, when you're doing rehearsals and stuff, nobody laughs in rehearsals anymore. You just do it. And then suddenly on stage, the audience brings it alive with their laughter. And that for me was a moment where I thought, yes, this is... this is why we write, because we're going to engage an audience who is going to understand and be able to laugh at ourselves. That was a huge moment for me. And I think that it's like a coming of age, that as lesbians, as feminists, we can come of age and we can start doing our own jokes. We can start laughing at ourselves and we can laugh at our idiosyncrasies and our weird ways of doing things. With, you know, in a, especially with an audience who's going to understand and appreciate all of those jokes. And I remember that moment you were talking about being on stage with that Ina had organised. Was that at Footscray Community Arts Centre? And just to be able to go along and the diversity of voices, I already knew Lisa's work and Ina's work, and that, I think that was probably the first time I'd heard your work, and I was very... very impressed. It was excellent. So, and it was probably from them that we started, getting to know each other a wee bit. And see, that's what we need. We need forums where we can hear each other, where we can laugh and understand and appreciate and expand our knowledge. So even if you get a bit shocked by what somebody said on stage, you can go away and think about it and think, oh, well, that's not too bad. I haven't thought of it about it in that way. You know what I mean? You have to push the envelope. You have to be expanded. Otherwise, you just get, you know, more and more into yourself and not so expanded.
It's a great point, Trish.
Emily, Leanne and Jean, thank you so much.
This has been a special broadcast from Broad at the Melbourne Feminist Writers Festival on Joy 94.9.
Thank you, sisters. You've been listening to this Broad podcast here on Joy 94.9. Don't forget to tune into us Monday nights at 9 p.m. on Joy for feminism in your ears.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.